Thank you, Steve. Good morning to one and all. It's Wendy Snyder here. Bill Leff is taking a couple of days off.
He's well on a deserved
toy sabbatical. It's not well deserved. Okay. I don't know if you remember, was it the beginning of this year that we were off for the holidays? He came back, worked one day, and was off again. Is that what
it
was?
Yeah, it was a grueling day, though.
All right, so Dane Neal is sitting in his place today, and thank you for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. We're going to have a lot of fun. It's always great to sit in. You know, knowing Bill the way that I do, I'll be able to pop in with Bill-related comments and maybe give the version of what I think Bill might say.
That might be fun.
We'll see.
Although, Bertrand, what did you say earlier?
Well, Dane's comments, they remind me of an episode of Bewitched.
Which Darren am I, the Dick York or Dick Sargent?
Dick York was way better.
Because you're saying Bill throws in the pop culture reference, and I said they're historical pop culture.
You know, you said it's not really pop culture, it's pop history, because he does bring up terms that three listeners get.
Yes. Well, I think he does that, too, to just kind of show off his kind of historical...
Really? That's showing off?
...toy and candy acumen. Well, he gets a lot of high praise for it. People are like, whoa, how do you know that?
Let's
make
this first hour things we don't like about Bill.
No. There's not much. Really, what is not to like about Bill? What's not to like?
No, he's
great. Ben Cortez is in the studio, one of the engineers here. Do you have to fix that microphone right as we're getting on the air? Ben is sporting a fresh new haircut, and he said he's going to the Milwaukee Summerfest, and it gets hot.
It's the
perfect time for a haircut.
Yeah, that's what you got to get it off your neck. You don't want it on there, and it's the world's largest outdoor music festival, Summerfest, just a little north of the border there. But it is one giant concrete slab. You know, that whole Summerfest round.
It's pretty hot.
It gets pretty hot, and that's why he's also got kind of a breathable shirt, sort of fashionable, and in the burnt umber. Family of colors.
To match the burnt skin when the sun beats down on him. I've had some great times at Milwaukee Summerfest. Is it Milwaukee Fest? Is it Summerfest
in
Milwaukee?
They may have a Milwaukee Fest, and why shouldn't they? And if they don't, that's a suggestion to do it. But it's called Summerfest. It's got that big goofy smiley face.
Oh, yeah.
And they've got, you know, it's got all the normal kind of accoutrements of a festival. You've got some rides. You've got maybe a trolley system, a Ferris wheel. But then also all that music. And they've got a bunch of those different stages where you're going to have some high-level bands. I have not necessarily checked out. I think we'll probably do it soon as far as some of the headline acts. But they have – it is a place where you can go and see, you know, Cheap Trick play, you know, for free with just a few hundred other people on some of those small – they may have like, you know, 6-7 stages. Everything from, you know, the biggest acts recording and touring today all the way to kind of your favorite bar bands from the area.
I'm trying to get the schedule here. Hang on. But I was telling you off the air, I had a wonderful yet dangerous incident at the Milwaukee Summerfest. I went to see the B-52s open up for Ziggy Marley. So right there, what a great set.
Yes, it's a party.
It is a party. And I went with my girlfriend Marianne and her brother Scott. And we drove, you know, little Chicagoans driving all the way up there. And I went to get beers for everybody. And there were three beers. I didn't want to drop them. So I got those little cardboard, you know, beer holders. Paid like, I don't know, $20 a beer. It was a lot of money. And so I was walking back to bring the beers back. And some really large man who was very sweaty and very loud and seemed to be very drunk turned right into me. And I dropped all three beers. Now, I didn't know what to do. It's really kind of my loss. I get it. But it was totally his fault. So I said, I just looked at him and I said, really? Or something, you know. And he just looked at me. He goes, what's the problem? And I said, I don't even get an I'm sorry from you, huh? And he goes, for what? He was just being a complete jerk.
Was he aware that he?
Because it fell all over. It splashed all over my legs, you know, beer foam everywhere. And he would not, like, own up to it. I don't know what I expected him to do. I guess I didn't expect him to say, here's $50, go buy more. But
that would be nice.
Just an I'm sorry, just something, some acknowledgement. And so I just kind of looked at him holding his beers, and I kicked him out of his hand.
Just like Jack Black in Anchorman. Now this has to happen.
Well,
and you kick Baxter over the wall.
It was wrong, I will admit. There happened to be two police officers that were right there.
On beer detail.
I don't know what they were doing, but So they kind of pulled me aside and they're like, okay, you're out of here. I said, no, I am not out of here. He goes, what are you doing? It's like 100 degrees out. You're kicking a beer out of this man's hand. I mean, I said, where were you 30 seconds ago? 30 seconds ago it happened to me. I'm sorry, you're going to have to leave. So, you know, I did the fake crying and said, listen, we're from Chicago. My girlfriend's in. I just was trying to get some beer. I promise no problems ever again. And they walked me to the gate and then they didn't let me go. So they're like, just come on. Pull it together. Don't do this again.
Pull it together, Wendy. Well, you know what? That would drive you absolutely insane. Here's a couple reasons why is at least you would want sort of that acknowledgement of not only the time. Sometimes in those lines, I don't know if Summerfest is any different than any others, but certainly at summer, sometimes you're in the lines for like 15 minutes waiting to get the beer. And then, you know, they've got you. You're in a captive environment and
you'll pay whatever.
It's $10, right? Yeah. For whatever it is. And if you get them for your friends, you know, you've waited in that line. You've spent like $40, depending on how much you may have budgeted. Those may have been your two last beers for the entire concert. Plus, it's tough to get down to your seat, back up.
I know. And I was carrying three and I didn't want to spill any. So I put them in the cup holder.
Thoughtful.
So I didn't want to take a sip of mine, even though I was dying to, because it would make things off balance. So, I mean, I was waiting to savor it. It was my first beer of the day.
Wow.
And you mentioned something that it's not the person who does the bad thing. It's the reciprocator who gets in trouble.
Whenever you watch sports, you know, in the NFL, something happens, whatever. It's the guy that gets up and says, you know, he didn't like that, or you poked him in the eye, or whatever, and then goes after it. That guy always gets caught. But it's good that you were able to, you know, as a communicator, be able to kind of share.
To cry. It was my communication.
Whatever you did, because think about how horrible that would have compounded it. You'd have to look that guy up and find a way to give him a piece of your mind, because at least what you'd want is some acknowledgement of, wow, that sucks. I am so sorry. If I had $20 extra, I would have given it to you, even if it was like the young kid Dane, you know, where you would have been like, geez, I feel terrible, because you know how expensive all that is.
And the mom in me now, I didn't have kids at the time, so I of course now would not kick beer out of somebody's hand. Maybe I wouldn't.
As an example, like.
But honestly, if I turned around and knocked into somebody and they dropped their beers, honest to God, the mom in me now would go, come with me. Come, let's go back up to the counter and let's just go, listen, this was a bad mishap. I bumped into her. She dropped all her beers. I know you pay for the cups. Can you just refill these cups or something? I would have tried to solve the problem.
Wendy, that is a very unique scenario, because then you put it on to the general human nature of the people of the beer world. I'm thinking, depending on the person, but I'm thinking, unless you found someone that could relate, they'll probably say like, no, sorry, because, you know, they can't control what happens to the, you know, what you do with your, you may have, you know, drank the beers, who knows. But if it's someone that could sympathize and understand that situation, if it was me and I was the beer vendor, I would give
you'd totally do it.
I would totally give you new beer. But that's an interesting thought. I had never. Like, hey, let's solve this together.
Yeah, and just because you know what this thing makes me think of? I don't know why I just pity children and feel so sorry for anything that goes wrong. But, you know, you go to an ice cream store.
Absolutely.
And you're there with the whole family. And, you know, sometimes the ice cream scooper does not push it down on the cone. So the little kid takes the first lick and the ball bounces.
We've all seen the open of the great sitcom King of Queens, right? Where he turns around, it falls, and then he turns right back around. But for the kids, yeah, for sure, because, and that's it. And we've got three littler kids, and there's no way to just explain to them, hey, you had one, you dropped it, it's gone. It's more like, okay, let's maybe insurance. Is there a company out there, Allstate maybe, that could have
I like it,
like festival experience insurance? And let's say you lose your ID, let's say you get kicked out. Or let's say you drop your beers, you put a claim in.
All right. Well, I really would have, if I was the one that knocked into someone now, maybe not, you know, 20 years ago, I may not have done that, but I would go up to the beer counter and say, listen, terrible thing. I bumped into her. I feel so bad. You know, these beers are expensive. Any way you can top them off. And we'll see what you think. 312-981-7200. That's the number. 312-981-7200. It's Wendy Snyder. It's Dane Neal, and it's 720 WGN. Wendy Snyder, Dane Neal here, and we're talking about Milwaukee Summerfest. I went there. B-52s opened for Ziggy Marley. God, that was such a great show that I did get to see.
Thank goodness.
A guy ran into me, knocked down three beers that I was carrying in a container, did not apologize or even acknowledge it, and he was a jerk. So I kicked the beer out of his hands. That's when two police officers were there and kind of escorted me to the gate. I don't even think I fake cried. I think I really cried.
And I know people are wondering this from a logistics standpoint. Where was he holding the beers? Were these held at, like, you know, chest waist, like normal beer level? Because that's a pretty high kick.
I had the container, and he must have had a container too, because it wasn't. I'm not that limber.
Like the Rockettes.
I'm not that good. So I knocked the beer out of his hands. I know it was wrong, but this was 20 years ago. Now I'm thinking if I did that to someone, I would walk up to the beer counter and go, listen, I just messed up. I ran into this poor girl who just bought three beers, very expensive. Anyway, we can top these off.
Work this out.
I don't know what would happen. Jim, you have a similar story?
Yeah, it was a ball game. We had a busload come in from Sycamore, Illinois, and the beer vendor wasn't coming around fast enough, so I went and got a tray of beers, and I'm coming back. I'll be darned, something happened, and a couple of them spilled on this one guy that was on the bus trip. Over his lap, you know. I felt terrible. It was no money out of his pocket, but anyway, I apologized, and I didn't get kicked out.
Well, that was an accident.
Every time since then I see him, I think of it, you know. It was 20, 25 years ago, and I was so embarrassed, but it happened.
It does, and it's going to happen again. So people be careful while walking with beers or on a bus with beers.
Cry over spilt beer.
Oh, you can.
Oh, yes, you can.
Jim, thank you very much.
See, the difference there, Wendy, is, you know, this was an accident. Accidents happen, but it wasn't like a flying roundhouse like you did.
I know. It was intentional. And I feel guilty about it, but hi, Rachel. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? We were at Alpine Valley, and I was seeing Pearl Jam, and we had lawn seats. You know, they had that real steep hill. So I go to the beer vendor and I get four beers and I'm walking back and everybody's bumping into me and it's spilling on me. So I get the bright idea and I put them up over my head and everybody starts grabbing my beers out of my container.
They were stealing it from you?
Yeah. So then I had one left, right? And I'm holding it in front of me. And sure enough, I run into this guy and I was so mad because everybody stole my beer that I wound up throwing my beer on that guy. And I was out four beers.
See, it is just, it's not good. You have to have beer etiquette, people. It's fest season. Rachel, yes, sorry that happened to you.
All right, thanks.
There should be some courses, right? Wendy, maybe some etiquette. You know, you mentioned the beer etiquette. Maybe some do's and don'ts. I think on the internet now, you could just have a page that had some bullet points, some proper things to do and to watch out for in the world of crowded beer situations.
Like what? What do you do?
Hold them over your head. And don't, I guess, she must have had a look on her face. Because if you just made a mean, like, get away from me and my beer face, then I don't think people would feel as, because if it's multiple people that feel that this is like, hey, you're handing out beer.
Although, is she a waitress, did they think? Would you ever think to take somebody's beer?
Were they on a platter? That's a great question. I just can't, I don't know.
Still, did you order it and pay for it? I wouldn't take it.
Everybody is in the same kind of pool of expensive purchases. And that's where I see it is that, and for Alpine Valley, very familiar with it, is that all of this takes a long time to go from your seat in the lawn or wherever your seat is and to make your way through those crowds. Takes a long time to get to the beer area. This isn't like, you know, you've got concession stands that are right around the corner. For these concerts, a lot of time it's a long walk. And then you've got the line there, and then you've got this, you know, it's expensive.
It is expensive.
And it sucks all the way around.
I once tried to circumvent that whole process by sneaking in a six-pack to a festival. It was Pitchfork. I had a false back to my backpack.
So you went all Inspector
Sneaky.
Gadget.
So it had worked before, and then this particular time, as I'm going in, they're really giving it the shakedown, and then they pull open the false back and see that I had a six-pack in there, and then I realized I was wearing a Tecate t-shirt. So that probably showed my hand.
I thought you were going to say you were wearing like a trench coat with all sorts, but it was like 90 out. It just didn't look
good. No, but
a beer in every pocket.
They did let me go around the corner and enjoy one of them. So that was nice of them.
Yeah, that is the worst when you have to dump it out. Ziggy Marley is actually playing Summerfest again on July 2nd. Not with the B-52s, but maybe I should go back and do a make good.
Oh, that's nice.
Maybe. I don't know. There is. I can't believe this lineup. Steve Miller Band. These are all separate entities. Peter Frampton, Moody Blues, Ziggy, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Bob Dylan, Willie Nelson, Sheryl Crow, Future, Big Sean is there, Chris Stapleton. I mean, oh my God.
Everything from country to
Paul
to,
Simon
to classics. And you got that. I'm telling you, that's why it's the biggest, not only because of the amount of acts that they have. It's got a really great range and some incredible headliners. To Kevin's point, you wonder where all of that beer goes. You know, as a person who spent some of my formative employment years as a worker at Alpine Valley, working the back gate and the beer
gardens.
What a
great gig.
You know what? When we would go to college, I would have sacks of garbage bags, like giant black garbage filled with, you know, bottles and cans of everything because it gets confiscated. Well, people are there. They're trying to bring stuff in and they leave it at the gate and we would just divvy it up. I don't know if that's okay, but that's what we would do.
Dude, that is like the best job ever.
Yep.
The best summer job.
Back in the day, big cans of Aquanet because people would bring, you know, the girls would bring that stuff in. But it was dangerous because everyone had lighters.
Okay.
Remember?
Listen, I was a fan of hairspray, still am to this day, and really in the 80s when my hair shot up to the stars. Why would you bring it with you?
Well, you know, you want to look good. And even though it's in a giant, sweaty, crowded situation, girls will bring all that stuff, but we weren't allowed to let it. We just threw that stuff out. But because back then, you remember, for encores and things, people would hold up lighters. Now it's cell phones. And you
could
create a blowtorch,
holding up a lighter,
you know, with the Aquanet.
The lighter app is just not the same feeling.
Wait a minute. So it isn't just the light from the phone. It's like a picture
of a
flame?
Oh, no, there's a lighter app.
Wow. Well, you don't get the burnt thumb that way.
That's a good point. Quick break here. We'll do some news, and we have a whole show planned for you. It's Wendy Snyder, and it's Dane Neal in for Bill F on 720 WGN. Thank you, Steve. Bill Leff is taking a couple of days off. I think he returns on Monday. I will be off on Monday because that's how we roll. We make sure we take opposite days off. And there are some airline stories in the news that I would like to discuss with you. I am not a great flyer. I've gotten better when I had kids. I was always kind of afraid to fly.
Okay.
Part of the time I would, again, I feel bad because I would turn to alcohol and have a few drinks on the plane just to calm me down a little bit. I didn't need to be all Xanaxed up, but I was, anytime there was turbulence for a while, I would scream, "We're going down." I mean, I wasn't experienced.
Right.
The more you fly, the more comfortable you get.
Thank goodness, too, there's less sweaty, belligerent people on the planes to knock over anything that you might have at your seat.
And also, when I had kids, I didn't want to show fear. You know what I mean? So they'd be nervous and go, "Oh God, why is the plane shaking so much?" And I said, you know, my friend Sue's dad, was a pilot for United for a million years, retired. And he said, turbulence is kind of like, you know, potholes on the roadway. So we're just kind of going over some bumps and, you know, then I'm calming myself along with my kids.
See, Wendy, that is so important because the kids look to you.
I know.
And just like I look to, because my kind of policy with is I'm never nervous unless the stewardesses
watch
are
their
nervous.
Face.
Right. If they look like they're like, whoa, and they do this all day, every
flight
day.
Flight attendant, by the way. Don't say stewardess.
Oh,
anymore.
Flight attendant or the captain or any right. member of the esteemed.
If the captain's out of the cockpit, I'm worried.
If he jumps out the side, it's time to make some plans. But you look at them. They do this all day, every day. And if they seem to be concerned, then I'm like, okay, I'm concerned. So that's kind of like the rule there. But as a parent, like, you are the flight attendant of their lives, right? And so you want to be strong. You don't want them to be upset about it.
I've dropped the ball in every other aspect of rearing them. So I figure getting them to travel well is good.
Wow.
And I want them to be well-behaved on a plane because, again, I feel sorry for kids. I'm such an apologist for children. But, you know, you get a crying baby, their parent doesn't want that kid to cry either.
Right. Ideally, they don't. You know, where they're looking at, but that's a tough situation. You got to travel with them. What are you going to do? Put, you know, ship them in a box or put them underneath the plane? You can't do it. The kids are there.
Do they let you? Because I would consider that.
I don't know. You have to read the fine print, but it is tough. And you know, the parents are probably even more upset about the fact that this is happening and that they're disturbing everybody. We've had kids, and sometimes the kids can't help it because of their ear pressure. They don't know how to make their ears pop,
right.
And you can't explain, like, hey, chew the gum. And so it can get to be kind of an issue. And then you've got to stop them from, like, kicking the seat in front of them and, you know, getting up and turning around and, like, bugging.
Oh, I love that. I love when I get
our
a kid.
Our kids have done all that stuff, and many kids have done that to me, so I get it. But you got to watch out.
I'm telling you, until you have kids, you don't understand that. But speaking of kids and flights, there was a flight diverted, Spirit Airlines, June 22nd. So what are we, 6 days ago? It was the unscheduled arrival of an additional passenger born mid-flight. It was a flight from Fort Lauderdale to Dallas, and it had to make an unscheduled stop in New Orleans. Christina Penton was 36 weeks pregnant. She boarded the flight with her 11 and 12-year-old kids in tow.
Whoa.
I didn't know you can fly so close to... can you fly in the...
Well, I think some of that kind of falls on the person themselves, that they should know, like, hey, maybe this isn't a good idea, or they talk to their doctor. I don't know if there's, like, specific rules, and I'm not sure if the airlines make you sign some kind of waiver or ask.
But your doctor...
People are all different sizes.
Yeah, I know, but I think your doctor... I didn't know if you could fly in the last trimester just in case this happens.
What if you
don't
ask them? You know, what if you if you just go? But that's a total nightmare, because if you're ever going to have one of those kind of big events, let's say a heart attack or having a kid.
Let's say having a baby. Let's not say having a heart attack.
Well, no, but if you're going to have, you know, that would be a scary,
right?
I guess. Granted, it's tough wherever you do it. But in that environment where you're kind of limited to the support that may be on board, you always hear those stories that some doctor in like row three jumps up and saves the day. And you hope that guy's flying with you, but... You never know.
I know. I should get a doctor to fly with me every time I do it. Christina Penton was 36 weeks pregnant. She boarded the flight with her 11 and 12-year-old kids in tow. She had carried those two earlier kids to full term, so she didn't think anything of it. She's like, I got 4 more weeks. No big deal. I have time to make the trip. Soon after takeoff, Christina Penton wasn't feeling very well. She alerted the flight attendants, and they went into action, making her comfortable, giving her free water, which is good.
That's very thank you, Spirit.
for which the budget airline usually charges. So that was good. And then the contraction started. God, I would be freaking out. Luckily for Penton, a pediatrician and a nurse were on the plane.
Of course they were.
What are the odds?
That's awesome.
Though they repeatedly told her not to push, Penton said her water broke, and 3 pushes later, bing, bang, boom, her son arrived.
Wow.
Fellow passengers clapped when they heard the baby's cries. That's the one time passengers were happy to hear a baby cry on a plane.
Yeah, and then like 30 seconds later, all right, keep it down.
Right. She said it went really, really quick. No time to prepare or land or do anything. He did what he wanted. We were just all along for the ride. So now baby Christoph Karsten...
Spirit.
There is no Spirit in there.
They didn't name him after the... Maybe that's after the captain. Or
no. 7 pounds, 19 and a half inches long. We'll have a story to tell. Anytime he produces his birth certificate under location of birth, where there would usually be a hospital listed, it says other airplane.
40,000 feet? Is that what it says?
That's what it should say. A baby being born during a flight is very rare, but flight attendants are trained to handle medical emergencies in flight, and they have access to doctors on the ground via in-flight communication, according to Spirit Airlines spokesman Paul Berry. Even though he was born a month early, Christoph is healthy, no complications. And he is good to go.
Well, they're really fortunate. You hear about the stories of, you know, on a train or in a cab or the side of the road, and all that stuff can happen with the birthing. You can't necessarily stop that. But then they get them to the hospital right away because, you know, you've got to cut the cord. Sometimes there's things to do with, you know, with the baby right after. Because I know with Maxwell, he hadn't gotten enough oxygen. They had to, like, do some extra stuff to him right away. You don't have that on the plane. So that's a little bit tricky, right? Because how did that work? And Wendy, as a mom, you know, did they cut the cord? What did they do with the baby? I mean, what do you do after everybody claps and says, yay, then you've got 3 hours to get to Topeka?
Well, thankfully, there was a pediatrician and a nurse on the plane, so I'm sure they clamped it off and handled it.
Gotcha.
But, yeah, there are, and don't they, do they, st- and I... Maybe incorrect here. Don't they drop something in the baby's eyes?
They do. Some kind of nickel.
Silver nitrate, I want to say, but I don't know if they do that anymore. And why do they do that?
I'm not sure. I think if I can remember, and this was a while ago, I think they smeared some kind of salve in their eyes. I mean, there's things to do.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying is that if you're on your way where then someone can take you the rest of the way to the hospital because you were on the way, it's one thing. But if you're up in a plane and you have, you know, another couple hours to go, I'm just...
Can I tell you something? Those seats don't recline enough to have a baby.
Imagine if, see, the people complaining, you know, whether it's like somebody's got this or they're leaning into you, they're sleeping on you, they're snoring or whatever. Imagine if the complaints you'd see on social media if someone has a baby next to me. Oh, my gosh. This person.
Can you believe her?
Like I got, right.
I have another airplane story in the news, and we'll continue after this. 312-981-7200. It's Wendy Snyder and Dane Neils in for Bill Leff on 720 WGN. Bill Leff is on vacation for a couple of days, and Dane Neil is sitting in his place. I can't find my story I just read, but there was a baby that was born on a plane, came very quickly, and everything's okay. The baby's good. We had talked about, I mentioned silver nitrate, if I can just correct ourselves, because I hate giving out misinformation, even though that is my nickname.
It sounded familiar, but it also sounded like the remedy or what you'd use for a werewolf, you know, to kind of fend them off.
It's a silver bullet.
Something like that.
To prevent neonatal conjunctivitis, also known as pink eye, most hospitals are required by state law to put drops or ointment in a newborn baby's eyes to prevent disease. In the past, silver nitrate was used. It has been mostly replaced with antibiotic eye drops, such as erythromycin.
Good to know. Yeah, so that it was kind of like a savvy thing. So for the same purpose, same exact reason.
All right, and the baby was born midair, and they put other airplane as place of birth, which I don't... What do you mean, other airplane?
And
what's
how do you
the original?
I know you got the citizenship if your parents are, but a lot of tricky things there.
Heidi, you have a question?
Yes, this is Heidi from Indian Head Park. I'm just wondering, I know you said that for other, they put down an airplane, but what about the state where the baby is born? What do they do with that?
That's a good idea. Whatever state they were flying over, I don't know. They don't say that. They just put airplane.
Yeah, how far does the state go up? I mean, does it go up to infinity, or does it just go up to, like, international water type stuff? You know, like...
Our state lines vertical is what you're asking?
Yeah, I'm just...
Yeah, they don't say.
So but, this kid will never know where he was born, right?
Well, they could say, like, you were over Nebraska.
I think
something.
This is a way cooler story than going, you know, Gottlieb Hospital.
Right, right.
Especially.
Okay, well, I was just wondering.
Thank you, Heidi. Though, think about it, you know, when you start registering your kids for school, you have to have a birth certificate, and they always ask you, you know, you're filling out a passport application or whatever, and it's like, what city were you born? What do you put? Airplane city? Where's that? Colorado?
I don't know. I mean, for some situations, especially with so many things automated on those applications, some of that's going to get kicked out, because when you go to flip down and all you get to do is you know, click a button by a state.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
airplane's not going to come up.
Yep. They're going to have to figure it out. And it may be like the state you were over at the time, or maybe just the state where you reside. That's true. It's a great story, though. So,
all right. Another airline story. And I wanted to share this with you. And listeners, feel free to jump in. 312-981-7200. Do you have, again, I'm not a great flyer. I'm getting better the more I do it. But every time that I am boarding a plane, I kind of touch the outside of the plane, and I'm like, you know, get us there safely.
Let's go, girl.
I every time. I swear, if you flew with me, you would see me do that just as you're going from the jetway or the, you know, the whatever it is.
Tarmac.
Yeah, you're getting on the plane, and I just kind of touch the outside of it, and I'm like, all right, get us there safely. There's a woman that had a ritual that she did, too. A flight out of Shanghai to China was delayed for several hours after a superstitious passenger, much more superstitious than me, decided to throw a bunch of coins at the plane's engine. That was her good luck charm. According to the report, the elderly woman was spotted on the tarmac throwing coins at the plane's engine while preparing to board the China Southern Airlines flight CZ-380. Thankfully, another passenger spotted the 80-year-old woman and alerted the proper authorities. Now, aren't those engines already in motion? Wouldn't it be, like, ricocheting everywhere?
It couldn't be good. You know, that's not something that you definitely want to do. And how would she get... Well, I guess in some... You know, we've all had those situations where there's a ladder or some kind of stairs, you know, up to the
oh, you can usually
Well, I mean, but if you're in the, where it's that closed kind of gateway,
oh, right.
You can't, you don't have the option to throw coins into the engine.
You throw coins in a fountain, not in an engine.
You make a wish. Yeah, I'm not sure. I've never heard that one.
Police detained the woman, and 150 passengers were taken off the plane.
Nice.
Nice
sure
pain.
They appreciated that.
While the ground crew painstakingly retrieved the good luck charms, 8 of the coins missed, but 1 coin was lodged into the plane's engine. That could have been bad. A bird flying in there will take it down.
Yeah.
A coin is not a good thing. The plane did eventually take off, but it was delayed by more than 5 hours thanks to the coin toss.
Oh, geez. That lady owes somebody an apology and probably some dollars, too, for the repair of the plane. Now, Wendy, you mentioned that you kind of you make that bond, right? You do the mind meld with the plane as you're getting on.
I do. I touch it every time.
Now, do you feel more safe on a bigger plane than you would on, let's mm-hmm. say, sort of a Buddy Holly special?
I would not go on a Buddy Holly special.
So it has to be like a regular...
Yep.
Kind of plane
a
with
jet.
A bunch of people. No propellers? Well, I mean... if it,
cause a jumbo jet. Isn't that what it is? I don't know what the terminology is, but an airplane.
Okay. All right. So it's got to be a big commercial airplane.
Yes.
You wouldn't do the private small thing.
No
okay.
way, Jose.
Okay.
Uh-uh.
That's probably wise.
Chip, how are you?
Hey, doing good. So I take, or at least in the last year, I made a couple trips down to Naples, Florida from DeKalb, Illinois. And, you know, you become intimately familiar with your vehicle during those
right.
22
all those,
to 24 hours.
Yes, all the sounds so, that it makes, what doesn't sound right. Yeah.
So it's my wife and my 2 kids, and, you know, it's important that this vehicle protect me. So when we get down there, I always am sure to pat it on the dashboard and say, nice job, man. Way to get us where we needed to go. So that's my little ritual, not necessarily with planes, but definitely in cars. I love driving. So you got to take care of your car. You got to let it know that you appreciate how well it's done.
Oh, there are so many times. Well, because your car, you have this. I mean, it is a member of the family sometimes. You
yeah.
I don't want to say it's an intimate relationship, but you're very close. And there are those times where you need it, especially when we were younger. Maybe we didn't have like cars that worked all the time. Or as often as we would like. And you're like, oh, come on. You got to start. Like,
I know.
And then it starts. And you're like, yes. Oh, this is great. Or you're stranded someplace and it works. Or the battery's sort of dead and it's not. I mean, yeah, you need your car to be happy.
Some people have nicknames for their cars. Kevin?
Pistol Pete. He's a part of our family. Yeah, he's new. He's a new addition, Pistol Pete. And I love him.
What's with the is it an homage to the Hall of Fame basketball player?
No, or? It just fits.
Pistol Pete.
Is it armed with gun turrets?
No, there's zero gun activity okay. whatsoever. But no, we just, yeah, he's a new addition to our family. I patted him on the back yesterday, actually, because he helped me move a bunch of gear. And yeah, he's a great addition to the family.
How did the name come up? Was it the kind of thing where you said you look like a Pete? Or did it say Pete somewhere in it? Maybe someone had a monogram?
Well, we originally got it from I Love You Man, I think, because it's kind of in there where he calls him Pistol Pete. But I don't know. Sarah said it one day and it just kind of stuck. He's Pistol Pete.
Why wouldn't you do Piston Pete?
Oh,
it's too late now, Steve.
You got to confer with Steve Bertrand before naming your auto. Dane, Steve, do you have names for your car? I don't.
Not anymore.
My aunt, we just called her aunt because we only had one aunt.
So you don't even have names for your aunt?
No. We called, she called her car Jen. And I'm like, for years, she just kept going, okay, go get in Jen. We'll leave in a little bit. For years, why did you call her Jen? The generator light was always on, and it said Jen in there, and she called the car Jen. So at least that makes sense.
That does make, and that's not creepy at all, because sometimes, you know, the reason could be sort of weird. If it's just like a random human name like Pistol Pete, you know, that's kind of interesting, but it's from a movie. I get it. For the only car I think that had named was, I had a 74 Monte Carlo. Was like the first car that I ever had. It had purple windows. And Van Halen's Diver Down was stuck in the player for an entire summer. No, this wasn't an HVAC. This was a regular ice cold air conditioning though. And we called it the Neil Mobile. Actually, I didn't name it that. You know, my friends named it because
and that's your last
name. And it fit, so that makes sense.
Yeah,
but
Pistol Pete does not fit really.
it's from their movie, I guess. Maybe they both love the movie. Just don't wait till he goes bad on you.
Hey, Laura.
Yeah, hey, my car is named Orion after Orion Samuelson because I don't like margarine in my house either. And it's a color of butter, like this light creamy color. And just like Orion, I only have butter in the house, not margarine. So
I thought it would have been because of the Holstein seat covers, but
Oh, Laura.
Anyway, I'm gonna send Orion a picture so I can get an autograph.
Oh, please do. What a lovely story. Thank you for sharing that.
Bye-bye.
It's a lot of pressure for Orion. You know, I think that the car has to run right or it's on him.
Right, and it sounds good every time it turns over.
Right.
Because he's got that nice voice. All right, quick break. Dr. John Duffy is here. We will talk to him after the 11 o'clock news. 312-981-7200. It's Wendy Snyder here along with Dane Neal in for Bill Leff on 720 WGN. Fantastic job, Stu Bertrand. We appreciate you so much. I'm nice to you when Bill's not here. I don't know why.
Well, thank you, Wendy. I appreciate you very much, too. I only do that when John's here.
Dr. John Duffy. And Dane Neal's sitting in for Bill Leff. He's taking a couple of days off. He'll be back on Monday. I'll be gone. We're doing tag team vacation days. Dr. John Duffy is a clinical psychologist. He's written a book, The Available Parent. His podcast is Undue Anxiety. You can find it on WGNplus.com or wherever your favorite podcast is found. How are you, Dr. Duffy?
I'm great. How are you?
We're doing well. Something that we discussed off the air that I think would be very important to discuss, trying to get out of your element.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing that's been on my mind lately, and I've noticed in some young people lately, is stepping out of context. I don't think we consider this often enough. We get kind of established in our habits and routines of daily life, which I think is important, right? Because this is how we become experts and how we establish structure in our lives. But once in a while, we have to step out and try something different. And what got me thinking about this was my son and a bunch of kids I work with, college kids, have been studying abroad the last couple of years. And when they go, they've got kind of a provincial, kind of localized way of thinking. When they come back, they're thinking really globally. And oftentimes they're thinking, I'm not sure I want to major in finance. I think I might want to try something else out, you know, or I want to pick up a musical instrument. And so, you know, their worldview widens, and, you know, it's a kind of a really cool thing to see. And without that kind of experience once in a while, I think we just kind of get stuck in these ruts of thinking and being and doing that can be depressing after a while.
Well, and that is exactly it. And I don't think there's any way that even somebody is as great at communicating as you could really, you almost have to live it in order to truly experience it, because you get out there, done, you know, travel a little bit for sure, but then done tons of interviews. And it's such a transformative thing where you realize whether it's the food or the music or just in general that people have a lot more in common than maybe they don't, where you've got not only your own context, but your own context of what the world is like.
Right.
And it can change it entirely, change everything.
Right, right, right. And I think one thing that you learn when you get out of here, when you get out of your context, is other people's points of view. And you realize, oh, there's different ways of thinking and looking at the world. And some of us learn that in philosophy or psychology classes. But I think the world at large is such a better classroom for that kind of thing, you know, broadening your point of view, that it's kind of unbeatable. The benefits are immeasurable to my thinking.
I'm a big Twin Peaks fan, and as I'm watching it and catching up and watching the new episodes, these people all live in Twin Peaks. They've been there for their whole lives. That's where they've grown up. They've not ventured out anywhere. Now, I know that's fictional.
Sure.
But there's some truth to that, where people just kind of do the same thing every day, which is good and comforting, but you sometimes get in a rut.
Yeah.
So I moved from Brookfield to Berwyn. That's about as far as I went, which is, what, three towns over or something? I couldn't cut the apron strings, but it seems like kids today, I hate saying that like I'm old, kids today, but it does seem like they want to broaden their horizons much more than we did when we were growing up.
Yeah, I think there's an enormous difference. I don't remember talking a whole lot about, you know, studying abroad or traveling after graduation, but so many kids do this now, and I think they benefit wildly from it. Even if they end up doing what they were planning on doing beforehand, they just have a worldview that's broader and bigger, and so they consider different types of thinking, and they're open-minded to different political and philosophical views, and you know, I think there's only good to come of it.
Well, the study part of it, I think, gives it sort of a kind of a practical backdrop, right? There's something important that you should be doing, and you can incorporate some of this travel in it. When you think about maybe in the past, it was always in kind of a vacation context where you were kind of like, okay, I want to go here because I'd like to sit on a beach or see a giant papier-mâché headed character or whatever it is, or some ruins or tourist attractions, where now people are kind of getting out there. It's part of the, you know, the internet, the world getting to be a smaller place. You can pique your interest in so many different ways than you could have maybe with a travel brochure.
Right. No doubt. And there's a difference between traveling and seeing, you know, the Eiffel Tower and immersing yourself in a culture, right? You know, and that's what a lot of kids now are doing. And I think some adults are doing it too, but there's so many opportunities for kids to do this, whether it's studying abroad or doing some volunteer work, you know, abroad. There's a lot of ways to learn about different cultures, different ways of thinking. And if you just think about Chicago and, you know, the variety of art, museums, culture that we've got here and how little of it we actually take in.
I always wondered this, and Winnie, there's nothing wrong with not cutting the apron strings from a great place like Chicagoland, is you see those stories of people in either these small towns or industries collapse, and you wonder, like, why do they, you know, don't give them a new economic, give them some luggage, right, so they can get out of there and move someplace else. But the more places, and as interesting and beautiful as some of them are, that I go, I really, and I don't know if this is normal or right, but I really appreciate Chicago even more. And it isn't just because you're familiar with it. It's just we are really lucky. I mean, we have almost the best of everything. Some of the best people on the temperament and friendliness side. We've got great sports and architecture, all those things that we could say. But do you find that as you travel, or some of the feedback maybe from your kids where they say this is really, really awesome and important, but Chicago's great?
Yeah, you know, not to be, you know, too much of an ad for our city, but the truth of the matter is I do hear that over and over and over again, is like this deep appreciation for everything this city has to offer. And when you grow up here, and this is your only context, this is your Twin Peaks, you don't really have that thought in mind because you just assume, well, every city's got this, and they don't.
And if you grew up in the suburbs, which I live in the suburbs, your kid grew up in the suburbs, you know, I don't think my kids have gotten to appreciate Chicago as much as they should have. They're still young, 14, and I guess Michael, 18, has done a little bit. But we get selfish about our little suburb, and, you know, Chicago's a part of it in our state. But when you go elsewhere, you do look globally. You think, you know, wow, it's not just about our little area.
Right, right. And it is easy to be insular. And most of the time, that serves us pretty well. But every once in a while, I think it's important to just step out and try something new. And then you learn something about yourself. And every once in a while, you stumble upon, like, oh, I think I enjoy this kind of music. I think I want to learn this kind of art. You know, I want to dig into this kind of culture. And if you never are exposed to it, or if you're only exposed to it through a textbook, this is another thing I'm learning from kids, is, you know, in the sterile atmosphere of a classroom, you're only so exposed, but when you're in it,
when you're experiencing
you really feel it.
Yeah. How were you as a parent and your lovely wife, Julie, able to let your son go? Was that tough?
It was, I was just reflecting on the moment that he turned the corner. He studied in Dublin, and we were at the Aer Lingus International Terminal out at O'Hare, and he turned a corner, and it was kind of unceremonious, but we realized, oh, he's just gone now. You know, he's gone for 5 months, and, you know, and he's on his own. But we did feel like, you know, he's got tools, and he's smart, and he'll figure this out, and, you know, and so he came back so capable that, you know, the idea of like finding his way around the city here becomes, it's just second nature to him. You know, he's fearless in a way that I never was when I was his age.
You bring up tools. You know, the technology is there not only to stay connected on the communication side. So it isn't like it used to be. He could Skype you from anywhere at any point if he needed to. But I wonder, you know, with all the news that we get, and maybe it's just because we're hearing so much more about it, is it, I would, you know, as a parent, great, I've got like a 10-year-old, a 9-year-old, and a 5-year-old. I cannot imagine.
You're not ready yet.
No. Of course not. Of course not. Well, I think you know, when they're prepared to do it, but the world is a dangerous place. I mean, you look at, on the extreme side, the North Korea situation. Of course, that's, I mean, I think a world unto its own. But the world is, you know, you see all the stories of just all the kind of schemes and just dangers that are out there. I mean, is it the kind of thing where are there things parents can do to either, I know you can stay connected, but to help them be as safe as possible when they're traveling and exploring?
Yeah, you know, before George headed off, you know, we talked a lot about, you know, like safety and crowds and, you know, and protecting your belongings and watching out for, you know, anything that seemed, you know, when you see something, say something kind of thing, you know, like kind of being very vigilant, because he wasn't just in Ireland. He traveled all through Europe, and he was in places where there had been terrorism or terrorism threats. And, you know, and yet I have to tell you that, you know, in retrospect, I'm surprised I wasn't more anxious about it, but we really weren't, you know. And part of it is I think that anything can happen anywhere, anytime. And so if you focus on that too much, I think you're just living in fear. And so I think you have to almost remove yourself from that in order to be able to breathe and allow your kids the berth to do some of these things.
Dr. John Duffy is with us. We're going to take a break. 312-981-7200. It's Wendy Snyder. It's Dane Neal in for Bill Leff on 720 WGN. We're talking with Dr. John Duffy, who's in the studio with us, and trying to get, how did you phrase it? We need to get out of...
out of context, out of our normal, everyday, day-to-day context.
And you mentioned a good thing about your children studying abroad. My son Michael went to Ireland with his choir trip in high school, and I remember I was kind of like, you're not going there. This was right after the Paris attack, and like, I don't want you going somewhere else. But Dane, you mentioned with FaceTime, with texting, I felt connected, and you know what? You got to let go at some point.
You got to let go at some point, and today, like never before, you can stay connected. I felt as if I was as connected to my son while he was gone for 5 months as I was when he's just away at school, you know, because we can text at any time. We can FaceTime at any time. So if he ever ran into a snag, which didn't happen very often, but he could easily reach out. And right. I could do the same, I suppose.
Yes, exactly, if you just needed to hear his voice.
Right.
All right, so getting out of context, how do we as adults do this? Because I think we could benefit from it, too.
Yeah, it's kind of built in for kids, as you were saying, Dane. You know, like these study abroad offices on virtually every campus, there's an office, and they walk you right through it. But for we adults, you know...
A little more set in our ways,
yeah,
you know?
And just yeah.
And more scared to try things,
yep.
I think.
Yeah, I think that's right. And so we're used to kind of our routines, right? We get up, we go to work, we come home, we make dinner, watch some TV, go to bed, you know? And so to shake that routine up, and I'm in favor of just about anything that even for a night a week shakes that up, learning something new, you know, learning an instrument or joining a book club or taking a class. Like a lot of the colleges around here have, like, you know, kind of study at large programs where you can just take a class in literature or something you just have never learned about before. Travel somewhere new. And one thing I encourage parents to do is to learn from your kids. You know, kids know an awful lot about technology, music, culture, that we don't know, that we don't understand very well. And to let your kid be, first of all, kids like to be the professor sometimes. And
yeah, they need to be asked something too. Like, what do you think about this? That right. gives them a sense of accomplishment.
Yeah.
Instead of you saying, clean your room.
You know? Right, right.
What should we do?
Like a seat at the conversation table, right?
Exactly.
Where they've got a role.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, so not many parents, for example, and this is something I've been pressing parents to do, know how Snapchat works. So virtually every kid I know, from Dane, your kids' ages up to our kids' ages, Wendy, use this app. And yet, you know, virtually none of us know exactly what's going on there. We know how Facebook works, but no kids use that anymore.
Yeah, because
so
we're on it.
To just sit down, right, exactly. So to sit down and ask your kids, you know, well, tell me exactly how this works. Why do you use it? Why is it different than Instagram, you know? And then you might get somewhere, you know, and there's a connection that happens. But also you might learn something that you didn't know before.
I wondered this, and as someone who sits down and talks with people from all different age groups and gets into the kind of the reasoning of what they do and why they do it, our kids, like my kids, from 2 years old, she knew how to work an iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
Vivian did. Are they just hardwired in a different way, or is because, like, when you say learn things from your kids, a lot of times, especially on the, you know, whether it's the iPad or some other things with the computer, like, they're showing me how to do it. They just know instinctively, immediately.
Well, if you think about it, yeah, Dane, our kids and your kids in particular have grown up knowing what apps are, knowing how to navigate that screen, right? That, you know, was so foreign to us 10 years ago. This was brand new, and most of us were like, I have no idea what to do with this thing. Your kid, it is absolutely hardwired into their brains. And so there's probably things to learn even from your kids. If you just track what they do, you might find, like, wow, I didn't know that there was that kind of efficiency here.
What are your kids' names, by the way?
Maxwell, Eleanor, and Vivian.
All right. I have a question for you, Dr. Duffy. Dane sometimes brings his kids here because...
He doesn't want to.
No, I know. I know. And I feel really bad for you because there are just sometimes you have no one to watch them and you have to do something at the office. And you know what? It happens way more now than it ever did. There are kids a lot of places.
Sure.
But your kids, I never remember their names, so I ask them their names. Do you know that they make up new names? What would cause a child to do that?
I think we're going to put that in the area of creativity, right? Creativity and
Naomi was one of them.
Yeah, Vivian, her pretend name is Naomi. And then sometimes they'll do it as like characters from different movies that they like or some of their... they do it, I think it's under the umbrella
of
the...
They told me Ivy the other day.
Yeah, it was Ivy, Naomi.
Ivy and Naomi.
And Max was not their brother. It was Jack or something.
Yeah, Jake or something. I think it's under the whole... You know, just the stranger danger. Don't give out your real information. Although everybody isn't strangers, they're just. Yeah.
That's kind of really smart.
That's adorable. I'm
sorry. If it's a stranger danger thing, it's really cute. But I agree, it's also like really kind of clever and fun. You know.
Yeah, they're not doing it because they're afraid. They're just doing it to, you know, kind of screw
to be
with
silly.
Everybody. Yeah, right.
But that's where what I love about the kids and getting out of context. We as adults would never do something just for fun.
Yeah,
we really wouldn't.
One thing kids say to me way too frequently is, "My parents aren't funny anymore. They're not fun and they're not funny. They don't."
My kids don't tell you that, do they?
Your kids never ever once have I heard that from your kids. But, you know, and that's something I think we need to bring to our families again, is to relax a little bit, not worry so much, and allow part of our family culture to be like, we're going to laugh together. We're going to, and there's opportunities to do that watching TV shows and stuff, but sometimes it's just kind of creating a family culture where we laugh together. We have in jokes. We make up names for each other that aren't just insults.
That's a very key point.
But that's such a great idea. I mean, in the summer, we're able to have more fun as a family because the pressure's off with, again, nagging them to do their homework, which, can I just tell you, people, it doesn't make a difference. You can say, do your homework 15,000 times. If the kids aren't going to do the homework, what else are you going
to
do?
Ooh, listen to that. Listen to that. That
I've
is
learned,
wisdom right there.
But it took me, you know, Dylan's going to be a freshman. It took me till high school to finally go, dudes, you're on your own.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a consequence if you do it. And if there's a consequence if you don't.
Right.
And you'll pay the price one way or another.
But we all can learn from your fake kids' names, Ivy, Naomi, and Jake. We can all learn to, you know what? Let's have some fun.
The upside is, you know, and they're just amazing because they're really good. I know everybody says that. But the one thing I appreciate most about them is that they have like a really good sense of humor. And they're crazy. So they're constantly, you know, cutting each other up and making, you know, jokes and things like that. And I think that'll serve them well, I think, down the road. For sure.
I think it always does. Yeah.
Awesome. Dr. John Duffy is his name. How do people get in touch with you?
The best place to go is drjohnduffy.com. My website's got the podcast on it and the book on it. And my appearance is here.
Excellent. Dr. John Duffy, thank you very much. 312-981-7200 is our phone number here. You can text us. You can call us. We're going to take a quick break. We have news coming up. Dane Neal in for Bill Leff. I'm Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN. All right. Thank you, Kim. You don't recognize this theme, do you? I don't recognize this theme. Do you, Dane?
It sounds like an old vaudeville sitcom kind of thing.
Was it Charlie Chaplin who had the little shoes
were...
That's what I'm thinking of when I'm listening to this.
It would fit with that. Probably the same composer. You know, you get a prolific entertainment music person, probably doing a lot of things.
Well, Bill Leff is not here today, and I feel bad because there's a death in the news, and we call him, you know, Mr. Death sometimes, because he'll mention somebody and then just out of the blue, and then something will happen. And I don't recall if he's mentioned this particular icon before. Dane Neal is sitting in for Bill Leff today. The creator.
I mean, the stand-in griever. Or the Reaper.
Maybe. The creator of Paddington Bear has died. That, of course, was the theme to Paddington Bear, which I never would have recognized. Michael Bond has died at the age of 91. He died at his home yesterday following a short illness. And I have to tell you, I was never that into Paddington Bear. Am I too old?
No, I don't think. Well, here's the thing. It's a 91 first off good run. So I think that's if people on the early side say, hey, that's what you're going to go, you'd sign on for the 91. The Paddington Bear, here's the way that I think. So this is just my, you know, objective 10,000 foot view is I don't really remember the cartoon. I know he had some books. He's like a British bear. He's always kind of gloomy. He's got a raincoat, and that's about it, right? And maybe I'm sure he gets himself into some entertaining hijinks. But wasn't he more of a toy? Like I always remember him as a plush toy with a raincoat, and maybe more popular as the stuffed animal than maybe the entertainer.
Was he a cousin to Teddy Ruxpin?
I don't know. Well, when I think of I think of Ted, I think of Mark Wahlberg, I think of swearing. So the Teddy Ruxpin
thing. That game of association with you is crazy.
Yeah, so I think of him as more of a proper bear.
That might be why I wasn't obsessed with
the weather.
Too well mannered for me to like.
Right, I'm sure Tom Skilling was probably a big fan of Paddington Bear because of the whole weather situation.
He had galoshes. Michael, the creator, 91 years of age. Michael Bond has died, and I just read somewhere he dreamt up the idea for Paddington Bear when he was working as a cameraman for the BBC. He bought a small toy bear on Christmas Eve in 1956. He saw it left on a shelf in a London store and felt very sorry for it. I took it home as a present for my wife, Brenda, and named it Paddington as we were living near Paddington Station at the time. I wrote some stories about the bear, more for fun than the idea of having them published. After 10 days, I found that I had a book on my hands. What an unbelievable success story.
I've accidentally written a book.
I had a pet rock. I didn't write a book about that, but I should have because everybody else had a pet rock.
Right, your family. What are you doing? You're like, I'm writing a book.
Michael Bond said, after 10 days, I found out I had a book on my hands. It wasn't written specifically for children, but I think I put into it the kind of things I liked reading about when I was young. His stories about the bear with the battered suitcase. I didn't even know that. Have sold more than 35 million copies worldwide.
But not to you. Or me.
Yeah, I don't. Can we find out, like, when Paddington, the escapades of Paddington Bear happened? Because
the escapade, even just that word escapade, sounds like it's a little too fun for Paddington. Because his whole deal was he's got a battered suitcase, right? So he's got that. It's always raining on him. He's gloomy. He was left behind at the store. I think it's all just about being sad, right? That's it.
Why would you?
I don't know. Yeah, it takes a village.
Now, people who had kids. I must have missed the Paddington Bear craze. I had a Raggedy Ann doll, which I got to be honest with you, was really stupid. She was not attractive. It was a mop, basically. It was yarn for hair, big like Betty Boop eyes, and there was Raggedy Ann and Andy. There was a cartoon for a while. I had one. I never liked it. I think it was just the time where when I was born, somebody bought a Raggedy Ann doll for me.
Well, you mentioned when we were talking about the bear stuff and on the toy side, like Winnie the Pooh. You know, and so I think a lot of kids probably, they had the Raggedy Ann, the Raggedy Andy, they had the Winnie the Pooh.
My sister, to this day, loves Winnie the Pooh.
I mean, I'm more familiar with the backstory on that. You know, he had a friend named Piglet that wore sort of the striped 1920s, you know, bathing suit. Eeyore, his depressed friend that was I think those are the same guys, right? He's a donkey, burrow creature.
I don't know.
Right, and then the owl, you know, right. Yeah, the gloomy Eeyore. I mean, I know.
Now, wait a second. Who's the pig?
Piglet. I think he's just named Piglet.
Didn't he have like a crop top on? Was that Winnie the Pooh?
Well, yeah, right.
He had no pants.
Winnie the Pooh had a half shirt on. It was a red one, ill-fitting. Yeah. And he had no, as many characters do, no pants. And no one seems to mind that. They're wearing clothes. So they've got the sensibilities enough to wear clothes, at least a shirt, you know, maybe a hat or something like that. But then some of them don't. And no one, I don't think Eeyore had anything on. I think he was practically or completely naked.
He's a donkey.
Well, Winnie the Bear. Winnie the Pooh is a bear. And then there's the owl, I think, who's kind of judgmental. And I think he was a little meaner. I can't remember the rest of them. But, you know, all the crazy stuff. And in A Quest for Honey, I think it was.
All right. Now, Paddington Bear, did you say he had a yellow raincoat? Because, no, it was blue.
Oh.
And he first appeared on the 13th of October, 1958. So that's kind of in my wheelhouse. I was born in 63. I should have been all about Paddington Bear, but I wasn't.
Well, when did it come over here? Because was it more of a kind of a British television program or book or something like that? You know, who knows? You remember Curious George? You've got
I loved Curious George.
Yeah.
But I think when I was growing
up. Clifford the Big Red Dog. Remember him?
Yeah. That Michael is 18, and that was kind of really popular then. Dora the Explorer, of course.
Oh, yeah.
The Rugrats even were kind of good for a while.
Yeah. I don't know if they've made toys for everything. It's nice to have all these different cartoons now. Because I remember when I was a kid, you would have to wait till Saturday morning, and there were cartoons on for a few hours. If you missed it, you were just out of luck. You didn't have any cartoons. Now there's cartoons on all the time and a lot of characters and toys. Esther, my wife and I were talking the other day about crazy toys. There was a toy called My Buddy, and it was like a mannequin, basically, like a small mannequin. And there was a song that said, you know, my buddy and me can climb a tree, we're the best friends. And so they would show, I guess, a lonely kid who had this toy.
That's sad.
It is the commercial is so creepy. People go ahead and look it up.
Was it a doll?
Yeah, it was big. So it wasn't really doll size. It was like the size of like a little kid. And they implied that you didn't need a real friend because you had the buddy. And then you would hang out, you'd climb trees, you'd go, you know, playing in the park. And it was just this strange kind of toy that went along with it. It had a real catchy theme song, too. So anybody 312-981-7200 familiar with the My Buddy or had one? I never had one. I certainly saw the commercial.
Scary.
Yeah, it was
popular. Did you describe what it was wearing?
Red
overalls and a rainbow shirt and a hat. Not a rainbow. Sometimes it was just striped.
Yeah. My Buddy.
1985? Not my personal buddy. Does that sound right?
Well, the commercials were. You know, they had the buddy.
Here,
you know,
we got the commercial.
You got the
commercial. It's kind of hissy. I'm warning you right now. But this is I don't recall the My Buddy. Although, I had graduated from high school by then. I was into other things. I had a real
market.
My Buddy.
You're right. Not in the market for them.
My Buddy. My Buddy. My Buddy.
I can't stand the hissing, but that's the gist of it.
So you would go out there, experience things. You would teach the buddy things. Maybe he'd teach you something back. Maybe a little compassion for the mannequin community. Who knows?
Dane, if I can just say simply what this is, it's a boy doll for a boy.
Okay.
That's really all. There are no girls in that commercial. There's a guy riding his bike with my buddy.
What do you like?
My buddy, you can't steer very well.
Bungee cord. But the size was a little bit. So this wasn't the action figure, right? These weren't, you know, Star Wars characters. The My Buddy guy, I think he was pretty big.
2 feet.
Oh, that's it?
Wasn't that big.
He looked big to me.
They're climbing a tree with him. Hey, my buddy's not pedaling. I'm on a tandem with him.
Oh, yeah. He is kind of fun.
Dan, you remember My Buddy? I don't remember this.
I do. He came with a slingshot in his back pocket.
See? Showed kind of his kind of tough, on the edge side, a little naughty.
The only person that I knew that owned one was a little girl, and she was a single child. And so we'd go over to, you know, and she had one. Yep.
Was my buddy anatomically correct or no? No one checked.
I was too young.
Yeah, leave that to me, Dan. Sorry.
Okay, bye.
Thank you.
You know, when we talk about my buddies, such a generic, like, hey, chief, hey, pal, you know, hey, buddy, is that we talk about naming cars. I wonder, did they give you kind of a guidebook? Did you name my buddy, or was it just always my buddy? Let's say you got a couple my buddies together. Like, who's who, right?
My buddy one, my buddy two. All right, we're going to talk about my buddy. I totally don't remember this, but the listeners do. 312-981-7200. It's Wendy Snyder. It's Dane Neal in for Bill F. 720 WGN. I hate little kid singers sometimes. They just push it.
Well, they're climbing a tree. I don't know if there's a waiver form for that. You know, someone would, like, in this day and age, someone would say, like, I was inspired to climb the tree by my buddy, and therefore someone should pay if I injure myself.
Mo, you remember my buddy?
Hey, yeah. My next door neighbor had one for her son. First of all, it looks just like Chucky, which is totally creepy.
It does.
It creeped me out big time. And every time I go to her house, I'm like, you've got to hide this thing. And we lived in next door duplexes. So what she did one night is we had sliding glass doors. And she, like, stood outside with that thing. So I walk in the kitchen. There's freaking Chucky staring at me through the kitchen. I'm like, oh, my God. That thing was just the nastiest thing. And I'm like, why did you get it? Well, he's an only child. I'm like, get him a friend.
Yeah, get him a real buddy.
It was the creepiest thing. I'm like, it's just, I don't know. I think that's where the Chucky movies came from, too.
Although my buddy does not have red hair. It's dark hair.
I think he's got he's got a genuine smile.
That really matters.
But it's no genuine smile. It looks like Chucky with dark hair. But Mo, thank you very much for calling. Another strange story from Carolyn. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi. We had a, my buddy, my son did, and it was funny because he named him Charlie.
See, but, good.
we had a van with those built-in child seats, and I'd strap Charlie in one and my son in the other, and we'd go into the grocery store, and we'd come back out, and I'm approaching my car thinking, oh, my God, somebody abandoned a child in my car.
It was my buddy.
Yes, it was.
It was Charlie.
It was Charlie.
So your son loved it?
I think so. And then I'm trying to remember because my daughter adopted him 5 years later, even though our dog had kind of chewed off his fingertips.
That's where everyone in the whole family, including the dog, can enjoy my buddy. And they tell you to take it with you everywhere, so you're going to bring it in the car, of course.
Carolyn, thank you very much. Lisa's son had my buddy, too. Your son loved his my buddy?
Oh, my gosh. My son totally loved his my buddy. These stories are so funny because he would take it everywhere. We would strap it in the car. He would wrestle with it. He would climb trees with it. Just that song just totally cracks me up. We still sing it to this day.
That's so cute.
It is just the best. And the story about the Chucky, we actually made my buddy into a Chucky. So
you're a fun family.
All these stories, it's just so funny. We sing it to my son. We just crack up. It's so funny.
Thank you for sharing that. I totally don't remember this.
Well, other people do, and they're sharing. I'm surprised there isn't a My Buddy, you know, along with us now. What I wondered is they show him kind of climbing the tree and riding the bike, but you almost have to ride the bike with one hand because you got to hold Chucky. He wasn't good at gripping.
Well, you put him in the front. You kind of wedge him in there, I think. Robbie, you had a My Buddy as a kid. It was your very own?
Yes, I had a My Buddy. He was that little kid, you know, like you described, 2 feet tall. And proportionately to my size, like a big kid. Of course, now that I'm bigger, he looks really small. But basically, you guys described it exactly. You know, it was that doll that mom brought for us. We got it as a Christmas gift. I got it. And my brother, he ended up getting something called an Alfie. So we kind of like traded it off, and he would play with it. I would play with it. But we didn't know what the agenda was. It kind of felt pretty good. He was inspiring, you know. My buddy sounded
Did he teach you
good,
anything? You know?
Well, maybe he was there to listen to me if I was kind of, you know, quietly speaking anything that was on my mind, and maybe pretending that somebody was there, but it could have served some purpose. I wasn't sure, but I do get haunted with that song occasionally. It does go in my mind, and I start hearing it, and I'm like, whatever happened to that? So it did serve a positive purpose, but, you know, I don't see anything today like that as
see?
The same way it was.
Do you have real friends now, Robbie?
Actually, no, I don't.
Oh, yeah.
Well, no one's going to keep a secret like my buddy, you know.
Exactly. You guys are funny, man. I really appreciate listening to you guys. And thanks for bringing this topic to the world so they can give their 2 cents back, you know, so they feel good about it. And so reminiscing about those times. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Robbie. And this is for you. Can we take one more really quick, John? You have a My Buddy story?
Yeah, well, My Buddy is totally led up to Chucky. Everyone's right about that. Yeah, so my younger cousins had one, and my aunt one time freaked me out. She put it up to the toilet. And so one time I went into the bathroom, you know, turned on the light, and all of a sudden My Buddy was at the toilet as if he was using the toilet. Freaked me out. That was over 30 years ago. So
yeah, you still remember it, John.
I still remember it, so... There you go. And Chucky, you know, absolutely, that's where that comes from, totally.
Well, thank you for calling. We appreciate it. You're my buddy, Dane.
You take me everywhere you go. Let's go climb in a tree, Wendy.
No, I'm not doing that.
Riding a bike.
Dane Neal is in for Bill Leff, and he will return on Monday, and then I will be off. Steve Bertrand's going to come in next with the Wintrust Business Lunch. Will you accompany me to the Stream of Consciousness, the other show we do?
As long as I can bring my buddy.
Is that what you call it?
He's out in the car. His name's Charlie.
But first, we have a meatball drop. Attention, attention. We have a meatball drop. Wanted to let you guys know that a new restaurant just opened up in Lakeview. And honestly, who doesn't love a good meatball? Sal's Trattoria. There is some really authentic Italian cuisine there. The chef is Alan Sternweiler, and they've dropped off some meatballs for us.
Nice.
That's my buddy.
Yeah, let's just make friends with the meatballs.
I would like a my buddy just shaped as a meatball. I would take it everywhere I go. Now, here's the thing for you, the listener. They have given us a $50 gift card to give away to you because, really, who cares as a listener? Oh, somebody's eating a meatball. What does that do for me? Well, you now have an opportunity to win a $50 gift card to a brand-new restaurant opened up in Lakeview, Sal's Trattoria. And Chef Alan Sternweiler's authentic Italian cuisine is meant to be eaten with a smile. So 312-981-7200. Let's do the fifth caller. 312-981-7200. You'll get a $50 gift card to Sal's Trattoria in Lakeview. And thanks for the meatballs.